Introducing Under Armour's Infinity High Sports Bra. Its ergonomic design is molded to support the natural movement of your body. With cord-out padding, the better breathability eliminates extra bulk without sacrificing support. And quick-dry padding is Under Armour's fastest-drying padding yet. When you're lifting heavy, running fast, and pushing yourself further than ever before, you need a bra that will help you go that extra mile and make you feel your best. Shop the Infinity High Sports Bra now at UA.com.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen, real results, real care, real about recovery.
Welcome back. We are back. Cannabis Hour has returned. It is myself, Elliot Lane, and Tony Noto. Anthony, sir, how are you today?
I'm doing lovely. How are you?
Lovely. It's always going to be lovely, like any version of lovely, peachy, just dandy.
Yeah, I've used dandy. I've used lovely. I never use peachy, but maybe,
I can't say I do either, but like if somebody said they were peachy, it'd be an acceptable... You know, I think way to say you're doing good today, you know? Yeah.
Well, it's Christmas time. Come on, man. I wanted to set up the camera right in front of our lovely tree that my wife took the lead on and decorated just last weekend. And it looks amazing.
Took the lead on mine as well. So,
because what talents do we have in that area?
Well, I'm okay. I'm okay at decorating. Like I have good symmetry skills. And I understand that sometimes two on this side and one on this side is okay. You know, okay. So I have like a basic knowledge of like the Renaissance decorating style, but outside of that, like she's way better. I mean, she's always way better.
I'm the same. Like I did a couple of things I messed up. I did the lights, and because she's like 5'1", barely, I was the one who put the the star up top.
So. Hey, man. Hey, if that's your job going forward, you're a lucky man. That's all I got to say. I want to say welcome back, everybody. Super pumped to be here with Tony today. Thank you to the pre-market prep crowd that sticks around for this. Super pumped to talk to three exciting entrepreneurs in the cannabis industry. We're taking a different turn from last week. You know, I do want to say, if you see this background, this Benzinga Global Small Cap Conference... There we go. So I do want to call out, you know, if you're an investor watching this show, if you're a retail investor, you know, or you're just interested in the cannabis space, because we had plenty of cannabis companies participate. The event we put on the last 2 days gave some incredible deep dives into companies. I definitely recommend watching that if you haven't yet. We went inside with Arcimoto, with Ideanomics, with Worksport, with Aero on the electric vehicle side, on the cannabis side, Forefront. Chiron Life Sciences, Avicanna, Gage.
Was Delta 9 in there? I thought
Delta
I saw
9 Delta 9 was supposed to. We had some technical difficulties, but they're going to be actually on this show next week.
Okay.
So I'm just saying Delta 9 will be around. We love those guys, Ian and John. Fantastic guys, fantastic company. I think something like the fourth oldest licensed cannabis company in Canada. Love them. So definitely come back for next week with Copper State, Delta 9, and Canopy will be on next week.
Yeah, it's a who here at Benzinga. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, Tony and Elliot. Come on.
That's where our talents lie.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I do want to say bzsmallcap.com. So you can, you know, kind of find us there. Reach out events@benzinga.com for some replays of those videos. Outside of that, you know, I'm pumped for this show today.
Yes.
Three awesome entrepreneurs. We are on the technical side of things. So maybe we won't be talking to a grower per se, or I don't know, like a big retail chain, but we're talking to the people that make those businesses go. Right, Tony?
Yeah. Absolutely. And I'm excited. This is where our talents lie. Like I said, we might not be in Christmas tree decorating, but we're good Benzinga cannabis hosts.
Amen, so, Tony. We got some skills.
Yeah, we got some great guests, skills and guests. Yeah. And on deck, we got West from Alpine IQ. I believe he's right up and ready to go.
Yeah, let's get him right over. I'm pumped. Honestly, Alpine IQ was a new company for me. I'm very excited to talk to West and kind of hear what's in the queue for them. West, how are you, sir? See ya.
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, of course. Happy to. Yeah. You know, welcome to Cannabis Hour. We have fun here. We learn a lot. Talks to some amazing people like yourself about what's going on in the industry. So let's jump right in. What is Alpine IQ? And I believe you're not the only one from your family involved, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. We were hoping to have Nick on here too. Unfortunately, just too many things going on all at once. So we did start this kind of together. He already had an engineering team in place. He has the tech background. And then I came from the cannabis retail background, having previously worked at Tilray before this. So together, you know, it was really over weekends, catching up, even playing Xbox together, just talking about the problems that cannabis retailers and cannabis companies overall were facing. And then, in just a few short months, Nick built out an incredible platform. And we've been out in the market publicly selling it since February. And it's been quite the year. Yeah,
That's awesome. We're going to dive into the platform. I have plenty of questions for you there. But it's something that I think is good to point out for our investors is that, APIs are a thing to look at here as well. Who's providing these DevOps, right? These development opportunities on the technological side for the cannabis industry? Because obviously it's not just all agricultural, obviously. That is a huge portion of this, but
of course.
I think, we're talking to Alpine IQ today about, the side of things like data management and marketing and, the cloud, right, if you will. So, let's kind of hop right in. You guys, you started this company. You came from Tilray in terms of retail. When was that? When did you all start this company, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, so I left Tilray in February, started with Alpine in February, but it was in kind of private beta from July of the year before. That would have been July 2019. And basically worked and designed this platform to service the multi-state, multi-market operators, and even multi-brand operators to be able to give them complete connectivity between all of their data sources. Just like you said, there's so many different endpoints and APIs that need to be built out to create an ecosystem for technology. And in cannabis in particular, those APRs are sometimes very, very hard to get a hold of.
Are you guys a Denver guys?
So we're actually all spread out. We started this really going into market in February. So we probably were one of the few tech companies in the space that did their first fundraise during quarantine. That was a big peak, right? So we're going in an office, really didn't need to happen since we're all going to be remote for the time being anyway. So we saved some money there. So we're all spread out. I recently just relocated to Colorado. The CEO, my brother, he's based in Texas. We've got a CTO in California. So team is very spread out.
What's the age difference between you and your brothers?
4 years between me and Nick. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you all meet in Las Vegas or like Phoenix, Arizona? Just kind of find a midway point there.
We're trying to do our best to see each other as much as possible, but I mean, Zoom calls are the norm. This is as good as it gets sometimes.
Amen. And thank God for being able to embed it to YouTube. I'll tell you that. Awesome. So can you walk us through your platform? Maybe tell us a little bit about what Alpine Q does for the retail side of things.
Yeah. What's the skinny?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we first started this thing, we took a look at the average cannabis retailer and we saw a point of sale system. You saw social media pages, in-store screen displays, e-commerce, usually a third-party email campaign provider. You had loyalty programs and text messaging, and then sometimes third-party analytics because POS analytics were cutting it. Not to mention you're managing a website and a physical store on top of all of that. So all of these different points of intake of information coming into the retail business, and none of these systems communicating efficiently with each other. So that at its core is Alpine. We're a data company. And you know, we sit as the center of truth, or the source of truth rather, and become the system of record powering all of these downstream tools. And you know, SMS and loyalty kind of became part of our product offering, just because to move at the pace that we needed to move to be able to get around the compliance hurdles that there are, it was better to take some of those features in-house.
So I noticed you guys also aid with M&A activities. Give us an idea as to how Alpine IQ would come into play.
Yeah.
With companies that are looking for M&A.
I mean, anytime you have customer data as a large operator already, you can use that information to help guide future expansion. So, you know, geospatial heat mapping is a really big piece of what we do. And you know, having competitor stores overlaid with that, it gives you an idea of where your customers are, where your customers are not, and where your competitors are. And that can help you when you're going to assess whether you want to buy a competitor or expand into a new lease, and just getting a gauge of, you know, how saturated is the market in this area? And do I already have a ton of customers coming from this area? And some of our analytics tools help retailers find that answer.
Okay.
So with such, you know, I would say different state regulations here. Obviously, you guys are able to work amongst different markets and, you know, be a through line here. How does it look with the states coming online as well? You know, and are you able to, you know, help retailers that achieve those licenses in similar ways, build out these platforms and systems? And are you able to kind of take on a little bit of a new earlier on form than you would have otherwise? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Are you looking to New Jersey?
Yeah, so anytime a new market opens up, we want to be first in there to start talking to people, to start understanding what the regulatory hurdles are going to be for new market entrants, how you can market to customers, right? So just on the marketing side, so many variations. You've got conditional sales that are not allowed in some states, and all of Canada, you really can't do points and redemption, but there's a really big need there for loyalty and retention. And how do you achieve that? And then for, you know, companies that operate in all of those places, that becomes a really big hurdle to face. So in new markets, when we come in to sell in Missouri or New Jersey, you know, getting an understanding of what retailers are hearing from their regulators is a big piece of it. Oftentimes, different retailers hear different rules, and understanding the early stage problems. So if you look at Missouri right now, there's a big issue with having to check patient month-long consumption for e-commerce providers who don't necessarily see all of the offline transactions that a retailer has. So how do they know without a direct connection to Metric if that's going to work? I mean, being on the ground level and being kind of a data consultant on how people can solve these issues and which companies need to connect and work together to build APIs to work through that has certainly become a role that we play.
You almost need experts in compliance. My God.
Yeah. In this business, you have to be. Every single person is a part-time lawyer if you work in Canada.
Touché. So how many dispensaries, companies are you working with right now? You know, what's the kind of the size, and maybe looking ahead into 2021, obviously no forward-looking statements here, everybody, we're not financial advisors. Yeah. You know, what does it look like going into next year?
Yeah, we are. So we hired our second and third employee in August, believe it or not. And we have crossed the $500 million in cannabis revenue analyzed. We've met 6 million unique personas in the country so far, or in North America so far, I should say. And so we're growing very, very quickly. And it's going to continue to be the case. I mean, if I just look at what we've got right now in the pipeline, I don't see us slowing down anytime soon. I really believe we'll cross the $1 billion in revenue analyzed before we hit 12 months. And so that's something that we're super proud of. And I think the reason being is because we really came into this trying to just work with everyone, find the way that we can partner with all of the point of sale providers out there and the in-store screen display providers, and figure out, how do we all work together to best serve the end customer? And for me, as a huge believer in the industry and in cannabis, you know, retail has such a big part to play in that, which is why we came into the market focusing on just helping retailers connect with customers, better educate them, and better speak to them as individuals.
Well, you got an individual looking for an answer right now. We got a question from our chat.
Ooh.
James Thottam has a question for you.
James, good to see you, my friend.
Do you have a merchant AR processor? The reason I ask is I know the CEO of Priority Tech Holdings, who runs the payment / merchant processing for Akerna.
A merchant AR processor. I believe so. That's probably a better question for our boy Nick, who couldn't join us today. But as
Nick,
yeah,
maybe we can connect you guys after chat about it. We have James over here.
We play matchmaker here at Benzinga.
Facilitating conversations is what we specialize in.
Sorry to let you down, guys.
Oh, no letting down here. Just a conversation TBD. Later.
This conversation's going south real quick.
Good off. Awesome, man. So you can tell me to shut up here. This may not be something you're willing to say. How does $1 billion in revenue analyzed correlate to revenue made for Alpine IQ?
I mean, you know, data is worth money. There's no doubt about that. But what I'd like to point out here is that we took a very different approach to customer data than really anybody else out there. And, you know, when I talk about like reinventing the data wheel for cannabis, helping these retailers win the race on who owns the customer, we made it very a part of our kind of foundation not to sell customer data. You know, we don't necessarily
good
stop
for you
retailers from doing that.
You're the one.
But as of today, you know, we've never sold any customer data down the line to anyone. And it's because I believe in cannabis, you know, people are giving their information to better their experience. But if you sell that data so that companies can come in and just blast them with messages, you know, that's betraying their trust, really.
Now, sorry, can I just do one follow-up question here, Tony, and then I'll shut up, my friend. So I saw on your site some little SMS texting. Is that now? I had some horror stories, you know, some nightmares come up from the election, right? Is that, you know, is that useful to you guys? I mean, obviously it's useful, you know, it's part of your system, but I'm just curious, do you all have positive feedback to that? And I'm assuming that doesn't necessarily fall into what we just discussed.
I'm really glad you brought this up, because this is actually something that if I could scream from the rooftops, I would. You know, we're an SMS company the way that Amazon is a bookstore. It's a very important piece of what we do, but it is certainly not everything when it comes to providing the best possible customer experience. It is something that I think became so prevalent in cannabis because there's oftentimes a huge education gap on product format and availability and what customers actually understand about what they're using. And so that extra channel for being able to have one-to-one conversations can be really powerful to teach people. That being said, there's a war going on. And especially in the United States, where carriers do not want, you know, cannabis to be talked about commercially on their platforms or on their networks rather. And so trying to leverage SMS in a way that benefits the customer, helps teach them about new products and the best and safest ways to use those products, is an important piece of what we do. We probably book 7 out of our 10 meetings on the SMS marketing and loyalty program features. And then I think we close probably the same amount, 7 out of the 10 closes are oftentimes because of the data functionality and all of these other kind of MarTech tools that we empower to better perform.
Great. That's good. That's awesome information, Wes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Tony, I think I cut you off before my friend.
No, it's all right. Well, we have only a couple minutes left, but I had to just ask when you said, we're not gonna sell data. What if I just show up with a suitcase full of money? And like, come on, just sell me that data. You're not gonna do it?
Oh, so here's the
hypotheticals.
We don't own the customer data. In our agreements that we make with our retail partners, we're facilitators of that data. And you know, there are companies out there that we are already in the process of integrating with who already sell data. And so we can integrate with those companies and help empower that if a retailer is already making that transaction. But we will have brand focused products coming out next year. And okay. we're making it critical in the formation of those products that we keep the customer's trust, the end user, and the stoner is what I love to throw out there. We want them to feel comfortable and feel like their experience is benefited and that they're not being betrayed by the people who they're giving their personal information to. And so I guarantee that when we do have products that are focused at brands, it's definitely not going to betray that customer's trust.
There we go.
Awesome. Wes, this has been a great first conversation. I think Tony and I both have a ton more questions, but I think we're close to time, my friend. But if you could leave our audience with one last thought, also where to find you all, should they be looking to get in touch?
Yeah, well, alpineiq.com, really simple there. You guys can fill out a request for more information and somebody will get in touch with you quick. But, you know, I just want to say that super stoked that we could be here in a day where the House has passed the first decriminalization bill.
That's right.
And we are one step closer into bringing this whole thing out of the shadows and into the light. So cheers to that. And cheers. Appreciate it, everyone.
Cheers on my oh snap mug. Right. Wes, appreciate you, my friend. Be well, stay healthy, and we will definitely talk to you soon.
See you guys.
Take care, Wes.
Great first guest, Tony. New company, but obviously on the rise quick.
Yeah, they're fresh out of the gates. They're hungry. But the obvious question was, how do two brothers only 4 years apart get together and get along to run a company? That's a big question.
We can just jump over the fact that I work with my brother who's 5 years older than me.
Well, and you guys keep it professional, but don't you ever just want to like put him in like a wrestling move or something like that?
I mean, he's lucky I don't live in the same city as him. That's all I'm going to say. If you know Patrick, you know he's shorter than me and he threatens to break my kneecaps all the time. All right, let's keep it moving though. I mean, Patrick and I could go back and forth all day long. He's not even here. Next we have Karen Mayberry from trim.io. We are going to keep it on the software side of things here. Once you get your camera and mic turned on, Karen, perfect. Wow, you're quick to that. I wish everybody yesterday was as quick to that as you were. Karen, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me here. I'm excited to chat with you both.
Oh, excited to have you. Well, let's jump right in. I'm really excited. You know, I've heard of Trim before, but if you wouldn't mind just telling our audience a little bit about what Trim.io is and when it came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Be happy to share our journey at Trim. We're a software platform that's completely customized for cultivators. So unlike a lot of other seed-to-sale platforms and cultivation solutions that are also serving other license types and other business types like retail, manufacturing, extraction, whatever, Trim is custom built for cultivators from the ground up. And we're really about helping growers and farms optimize their daily operations, manage their labor, track data, and maintain compliance with the state.
Compliance. There's that word again. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. So you guys are pretty niche. You're pretty specialized in regards to the cultivation side of things, which honestly I love. You know, no knock on anybody who's vertically integrated or doing, you know, more than one thing, but I think doing what you do and do it well, there's something to be said about that. So that's fantastic. So, you know, what got you into the cannabis industry a little bit personally, I guess?
For sure. Well, it's definitely a dream of mine to be working in the industry and even just to see, these legalization efforts and some rapid changes and breaking down the stigma and new states coming online. So it's super exciting. But I grew up in San Diego, California in the late 80s, early 90s and got introduced to the plant pretty young. And I knew right then that cannabis was for me. You know, we didn't call it cannabis then, but now we do because we're sophisticated and it's legal. So it's played a really consistent theme in my life throughout college. Motherhood helped me just overcome some of the challenging parts of my life and just stay grounded and grateful, especially as a founder, one of the hardest things that I've done. Went to college, studied marketing there, also met my husband, Matt, who's the CEO and co-founder, as well as my third co-founder, Benjamin Wong. Didn't marry him, but he's part of the team too. That's very notable. And basically all three of us have pretty strong ties to the plant, have grown the plant at home. You know, I got my card as soon as I could, even sold a little weed in college, kind of like side hustle. So you know, we all gravitated towards the industry. And in late 2017, when California was preparing to open the doors for the recreational market, we're based here in California in the Bay Area, the timing was just right. So we started getting out there into the industry and attending trade shows and just talking to as many cultivators and getting into as many cultivation facilities and greenhouses that we could and learning about the pain points and just the other software providers. We knew we wanted to build software for growers. And we kind of found this gap in the market. Like I touched on earlier, there were a lot of seed to sale providers that were established in the market. And then there were software systems to help manage grow environments, right? That control sensors. But there wasn't a platform for farms to manage just their daily operations, their teams, be able to tie all the data together to have one consistent or one, you know, one system that ties the data together and actually makes it possible to gain some insights from their production data, their labor data, and their environmental data.
How did the what was the labor data like in 2020? I mean, did it was that like something that changed this year? Because in certain corners of the cannabis sector, a lot of layoffs were announced, but in other corners,
Very political way of saying that.
Yeah, there were there was an uptick in hiring too in certain parts. So I'm just curious to know whether or not they're you know, on the back end of things, whether or not that transformed at all.
Yeah, that's a great question. So like I mentioned, we're based here in California and we were lucky that cannabis was deemed essential right out the gate, essentially. So the majority of our company or our customers, excuse me, they didn't really experience a whole lot of interruption in operation. They did have to, you know, figure out the cleaning protocols, be able to socially distance, limit capacity in the facility. But I think one of the ways we were able to support those efforts is with our task management system, which is how we help manage labor. And it does have some remote scheduling and, you know, tasking functionality there. So we were able to assist with kind of coordination of teams if people were offsite or wanted to plan ahead and understand how many people were going to be in the facility that day, just who needs to do what. So we did actually see a little spike in user activity, which was really cool and actually was really helpful in us since we were raising money at the time to be able to use that data to our advantage, since it was difficult to raise capital during COVID. And, you know, a lot of investors had cold feet, even though we did get the essential designation. Everyone was just kind of seeing how it was going to shake out with COVID, you know, but being able to leverage our data and show that, you know, cultivators were able to continue operations, they were able to utilize the system and were actually utilizing it even more was beneficial for us.
You see that continuing post, I mean, I would imagine you do, but any changes to that maybe post-pandemic once this vaccine is out there, do you see it kind of normalizing or continuing to grow? No pun intended.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's just going to keep growing because, you know, like we're all preparing for the holidays, but growers never take time off. Like they always have to work. The plants never stop growing. So they're always going to have teams in there that need to care and maintain the plants every single day.
Now, I did hear you say you all grew it at home. I'm assuming you probably don't do that anymore, being somebody who services the operators. But does that side of the industry? Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you're very perceptive. I don't grow at home anymore because I have access to products like these. This is not our grow. This is actually one of our customers, Flora Cal Farms up in Santa Rosa, who does an incredible job. And I purchase and smoke their flowers, so I can speak from personal experience. But yeah, like we did grow this year. We have a little tent in our garage where we do a couple plants, you know, legally. But it just doesn't compare to what you can get at the dispensary. So I would prefer to smoke other flower.
Yeah. Well, so you're the second company today. I mean, we only have three featuring, but you're like the first company, like Alpine. You guys were on the hunt for venture capital this year. And you were successful. I want to say I pulled it up a little over $3 million in a funding round.
Wow.
I'm curious to know what that process was like. Was it difficult? Was it tricky? Did it exceed expectations? Did it not meet your expectations? Because I can imagine, you know, pitching via Zoom wasn't so much fun or easy.
You know, I like Zoom. I like that we can be in the comfort of our own homes and be wearing sweatpants, right? Business up top, casual below.
I like that New Yorker cover, that New Yorker cover that went viral. The woman has like the wine glass and the blouse, and then she's got pajama pants.
Yeah, that was great with like cat food, you know, tins and stuff. No, totally. That's why I have my virtual background. So I like being able to hide behind Zoom. I will say that the process was hard. It was long. It took us a lot longer than we expected it to. You know, we started raising in 2019 and we didn't announce our seed round till just a couple months ago. So it did take us a long process. We started with a friends and family round, and then we ended up getting a term sheet for a preferred round. So we did go into a preferred round and ended up finding some fantastic partners along the way. It was such a roller coaster, honestly. You know, you think you're going to get one big fish and it falls through, and then you end up finding the right partner who ends up becoming a strategic mentor as well, and a board member. So we have three board members. One is Matt, our CEO, and then Micah Tapman and Ian Dominguez, who are both lead investors, Ian with Delta Emerald, and Micah with 730 Capital.
Yeah, we do have a question from the chat. It's a good one from Alex Kesselring. Is the focus on large multi-grow operators or small family farms, and how scalable is the software?
Totally. So when we first started selling Trim, we were selling to anyone and everyone, including, you know, different state markets, which wasn't a great strategy. We did need to get more focused, which is, you know, especially with the diverse state markets and all the different track and trace systems, like you can just go out of business trying to build product for all these diverse markets. So we did have to get really focused. We still have craft farms, 5-6 person teams on the platform. But I think the way the platform is evolving is geared towards more larger teams as we're building out more functionality on like the labor management, labor analytics side of things. So I think it's absolutely scalable. Like our pricing starts at $250 a month, which I think is very affordable. And that doesn't include metric functionality. So if you pay a little bit more for the compliance management there, since that's quite a lift. But yeah, I think it's a scalable platform because it just is reflected in our customer base that we have craft growers and we have multi-state operators.
You may have mentioned this, so I apologize if I missed it. How many, or are you able to say how many clients you have at this point in time?
Yeah, I can give you a close estimate. So we're nearing 100 accounts, but we manage well over 100 licenses here in California alone.
Great. So
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Tony, all you.
Well, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't ask. You know, we were at the end of a really tough year. Rather than reminisce about 2020 further, I would love to know what trends you expect to see play out in 2021.
Yeah, absolutely. I see like integrations as the future for a lot of ancillary companies like myself, technology providers. I think the space is definitely getting more crowded. You know, so that's one of the trends I see. The space is getting more competitive, I think. And, you know, there's only the licenses. There's only a limited number of licenses. So I noticed that the space is getting more crowded. I think you're going to really have to differentiate in 2021 and really prove value and ROI. And I'm excited about linking up with other software and hardware providers and being able to deliver more value and cover more of the market through integrations. Like, for example, we only have a metric integration here in California, and that really does limit us outside of California, even though we do sell our task management analytics, you know, features successfully outside of California. We're in 15 states, but, you know, most people are really looking for that compliance element. So we hope to cover that gap by partnerships. And I love the idea of partnerships. You can leverage what the other team has built if it's if you're compatible and it makes sense, and provide more value and just do more with less, essentially.
I like partnerships too, Karen. Those are great. So you know, in terms of like marketing, you know, what do you do to reach these companies?
Content is really big for us. I mean, obviously, I would have said events last year, right? Like face-to-face is so great too. With the cannabis. Yeah, I mean, we all love events. We all love seeing the familiar faces and, you know, popping into each other's booths. I certainly loved doing that in 2018 and 2019. I even have, I'm sure many of us have funds locked up with event companies that we thought were going to happen in 2020. So, you know, events are always great. They've gone virtual. I don't get that excited for a virtual conference. So we haven't really invested in that too much, but digital is big for us, and content is big for us, and SEO, because we, you know, we drive people to our website. That's how they can find out about our product, and then they can submit a demo, and that essentially starts the process for us. So, you know, content is big, being able to create valuable content that people want to download and consume, and then we can, you know, capture their information and nurture them and see if it's a fit. Webinars are great. We just shot a video with actually Flora Cal Farms, who I mentioned earlier, as we're releasing a new product that I guess I'll just drop on this show. We're not going to release it publicly until January 12th, but we're releasing it to our internal customers this week. So it's out, and it's our first patent that we filed, and it's a feature called touchless harvesting. And it's essentially, we're all familiar with like the Netflix load, you know, of the next episode when you're like vegging out and you're in a series and it's like,
are you still watching? Yes.
Yes. Like, go. Yeah. So the way that the regulations are written in California for harvesting cannabis plants, is really tedious. You have to weigh each individual plant. You have to log each individual weight and report it to the state. So we've enabled mobile tag scanning and a Bluetooth scale integration, and that automated load of the camera. So you can just scan, you know, put the tag in front, weigh the plant, Bluetooth scale, registers the weight in the app, loads the next plant, stores all of that, and you can send it to Metric with just a single click. So it's an incredibly efficient, seamless way to be in full compliance, but not be there in the facility for hours and hours and hours on harvest day, like many large facilities are. So yeah, touchless harvesting, I'll drop that. And
awesome.
I don't really remember what the question was. I just wanted to share that.
Thank you for that. That's fantastic. I mean, would you say that like California's restrictions and probably other states, like, is it unnecessary to go that hard?
Yeah, it's 100% unnecessary to have to report each individual plant weight, I think. I mean, what's the benefit of that?
Because you don't have to do that with other, you don't have to do with all the crops, right? Like other crops don't have to.
Exactly. I mean, I think supply chain management is critical, right? We need to understand what we're consuming. It needs to be safe, and we need to be able to trace it back if there is an issue. But the regulations are overboard, of course, because why not? It's cannabis. Let's just regulate the hell out of it.
Yeah. But do you think that that's does that have to end in 2021? I mean, it's a little ridiculous if one state wants to go that route, fine. But like you're in California, don't you think that, hey, why are we treating the cannabis plant different than the tomato? Like it would frustrate the heck out of me.
Absolutely. I think every farmer feels that way 100%. And now that, you know, here in California, it's been 2 years, we just accept it. You know, it's part of doing business. Will the regulations relax? I don't know. I mean, when it goes federal, and if it gets uniformed across the nation, then things are really going to get shaken up. I have no idea what the landscape will look like, but I don't see the regulations lightening up. For instance, Massachusetts, not on the supply chain side, but they're limiting electricity usage, you know, from the sustainability angle. So that gets really tough if you're forcing growers to use LEDs. They want to grow with HPS or whatever they want to grow with. So that's another example of you know, regulations really imposing their will on farmers, which I totally am down for sustainability and reducing carbon emissions, but there's other industries where, you know, they're big energy suckers and these regulations aren't imposed on them. So you definitely feel like cannabis gets picked on, and it does, but you know, we can all just smoke our weed and be happy and just be stoked that it's legal. We get to work in the industry.
Now, does your software have to evolve? I'm assuming it does, you know, with how cannabis is and still a bit unknown, or rather, you know, just treated unfairly, as we say. How does your company kind of keep up with that?
Blockchain. No, I don't know.
Yeah, right. We're constantly building new software features and iterating on our product. You have to keep up with customer needs, and also you have to keep up with the APIs of the systems that you're integrated with. Excuse me. So for instance, earlier this summer, Metric released some changes to their API, and you know, we're the last ones to know, not just Trim, but API integrators. So that causes a lot of work for our dev team to you know, catch up with the system. And but we have to do it, and that's fine. It's just part of doing business. But you know, you're constantly iterating, optimizing the platform, listening to customer feedback, trying to make improvements. We release new features every single week, whether it's, you know, a bug fix or something new and cool like touchless harvesting. But yeah, those are the two biggest things, is just building new features, improving old features, and then keeping up with APIs.
All right. I think we have time for one more question here. What about some advice for people getting into the cannabis space right now? Maybe your top few items for people looking to start a grow.
We'll yeah. Say. Or a kid in college was like, hey, I want to go in her direction. She was growing in college. I'm going to grow in college and I'm going to make something of myself like Karen.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a lot of advice, like fundraising advice. I mean, I think if you need to raise funds and plan for that, right, and kind of build out that pipeline, lean on your network, start reaching out to people who have raised funds before. You know, lean on your mentors. If not, hit some people up and trying to develop relationships. And then just like business advice, I would say, be very focused, be very strategic, and be realistic about what you can accomplish and deliver in a specific amount of time. Like we want to build everything, but we can't build every feature and we can't, you know, execute on every marketing strategy. You know, eventually we can, but we have to be realistic mm-hmm. about timelines. And so, yeah, be focused and, you know, don't take on too much. And then, you know, for hiring a team, which is critical, right? Your team is critical in any company, but especially as a startup, because the odds are really stacked against you. So I would say in building a team, you know, hire slow and fire fast.
Mm-hmm. Hire slow and fire fast. I like that, Karen. We'll make that into a t-shirt. wow. Awesome. Karen, where can we find you?
Yeah, on our website, which is trim.io. And you could fill out a demo request or you can just email me at karen@trim.io.
Trim with a Y, right?
Trim with a Y.
Trim with a Y.io. Awesome. Karen, loved having you on. I think I have some work to do on proving out virtual events to you. We'll okay, get on yes. that ASAP.
Yes, let's talk about that. Okay, cool.
Well, awesome.
Thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. All thank the you. Best to you and looking forward to seeing how fast you all can keep growing. Thanks again for unleashing the product. That was awesome. We'll talk to you soon, my Karen. Pleasure. Awesome. Tony, we've had a fun tech show so far, man. We've had... Yeah. Been all over the place.
Because I'm not a tech guy, so the fact that these folks are making it easy to understand and digest, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm a tech newbie. We'll say I'm a tech baby, but so like I get some things, you know, and hopefully the audience out there is more astute than us. But you know, learning is the name of the game when it comes to this industry, as far as I'm concerned.
And I like that. Speaking of learning, like she talks about the importance of mentors and finding some guidance and not taking on too much. You don't hear that too much from successful entrepreneurs like Karen. Like I think the feeling is let's take on more and then we burn ourselves out. And it's kind of a bummer, but she's like, take breaks, you know?
I think though, you know, and I'm assuming here, but it seems to me investors right now in the cannabis industry want to talk to people like Karen, right? They want to talk to people that do something and do it well. Yeah. You know, and if you are a vertically integrated MSO, I think you're incredible. This is not a hit on being vertically integrated at all. But I think if you're getting into the cannabis space, it is smart to do what you do well and grow out from there. And I think Karen is doing just that. Awesome new product, by the way.
Yeah.
Super excited. So, Tony, I think we're on to our last guest, my friend. Who is next?
Well, speaking of great guests, we got Rob Tankson from Presto Doctor. You have to do that when you say Presto Doctor.
Please, I'm going to say Presto Doctor every 2 minutes, and I expect that to happen every 2 minutes. Rob, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm expected every 2 minutes as well, guys.
All right. Presto Doctor. Presto Doctor. It's a pleasure to have you, man. And how you been? Are you holding up this year?
Holding up, and it's great being on. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
Excited, yeah. So let's dive right in, Rob. I'd love to hear what's going on with Presto Doctor. Maybe give us a little background into yourself and then the company.
Sure. So my background, I kind of started my career on Wall Street as an equity analyst. Then living in San Francisco, so kind of did the SF thing and hopped into tech like everyone else. I think I can do that. but yeah, I spent some time at Google and then also at a smaller tech company called ClearSide. And that's where I met my business partner, Kyle. I was always kind of a looking for a startup, trying to take a risk, and Kyle was always building a new app every weekend, and so naturally came together, just, you know, two risk takers, crazy guys.
The wild and crazy guys.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
I couldn't resist. Somebody had to do it. All right, all right. That's my presto doctor for you.
All right. Yeah,
there we go. There we go. But yeah, so you know, from there, we just kind of saw a broken process. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of the Venice Beach doctors in California, and then also other doctors where they kind of use the whole bait and switch process. You know, they would bait you in with like it'd be $25 or $50, get a card, and then you know that's $100 fee to talk to a doctor, and you walk out of the door paying about $200 to $400, depending on, you know, like who you were seeing. So we wanted to kind of bring a more streamlined process, but also more transparent pricing to the industry. So that's kind of why we launched Presto Doctor.
Well, that brings me to my first question, Elliot, if you don't mind, because I snooped around the Presto Doctor website and it got to that fee part, and I kind of wanted to hear from you in your own words. Like, how did you come to terms with like different price points? What is right and what is wrong? Because there is a fee in the service. You have to fill out all your info. And then there is a fee. So I just explained, how do you go about that? And how do you avoid the pitfalls that, you know, one would make?
Sure. And, you know, for us, you know, the first market was, you know, a bit tricky because, you know, we were offering a premium service and wanted to, you know, come in at a higher point. But what we learned, you know, through just, you know, the first experience in California and also launching other markets is because we don't have those, you know, costs associated with like a brick and mortar location, we're actually able to charge like a little bit less while still providing a premium service. So we basically just scan the industry in each state to see what, you know, physicians are charging. And then we like to come in at a competitive level based on what we're seeing in the market.
Yeah, I'm assuming this is based off kind of other telemedicine stats and data that you were seeing out there in kind of non-cannabis markets. You know, so with that, you know, for me being, I'm not super familiar with, you know, telemedicine. I don't use it a lot. Is that something that you run into? Like, is the education of what telemedicine is and then educating people on medical cannabis? Do you have that extra step there?
Yeah. So it's the first step is actually in some states educating people that there's a program in general, like New York State, for example. They, you know, a lot of programs that you know, are passed through legislation, they'll put money into marketing, you know, and say, hey, this program exists. This is an option now. There was practically nothing put into the medical marijuana program as far as letting people know. So like here, for example, a lot of our education is saying, hey, there are dispensaries in New York. You can buy a legal product. And hey, you can also do it online. So it's almost kind of a three-step process of letting people know that, you know, we exist after letting them know the market exists.
Yeah.
After letting them know market exists. I like that.
Speaking of New York, because that's where I am, and that's where I'm curious as to, you know, some of the traffic you've seen over here. Queens is like where a lot of the dispensaries, can you pinpoint where most of these requests and these licenses are coming from? Like, who's requesting? Is it folks in Manhattan? Is it folks in Queens? I think it's Queens.
It's all over the board, honestly.
He's got something against Queens.
I love Queens. No, I love Queens. I noticed that a lot of these places are opening up in Queens and not in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, he's in Brooklyn. There's a reason he's talking about this. Sorry, go ahead. Please continue.
It's actually a few in Brooklyn as well. There's one that's pretty close to Barclays Center, and you know, a few others scattered around. But you know, the dispensaries don't have like flashy signs, and so you can really walk past them and not really know that.
They're very discreet.
Very discreet.
Yeah.
Intentionally. So I'm assuming. So, you know, let's jump to the elephant in the room, the obvious. I'm doing it. I'm not even going to apologize for it. COVID. Tell us about your year.
So initially, you know, it scared the crap out of us, like everyone, right? We're worried about family members, worrying about health. Like, work is secondary at that point. It's a pandemic. Mm-hmm. So once we kind of work through all of that, make sure all employees are healthy, family members are healthy, then we kind of get back to business. We were really blessed to be on the good side of it in the sense that, you know, everyone was in a sense like forced to adapt to, you know, things virtually, whether it be shopping online for groceries. I'm telling my grandmother how to do this on a FaceTime call, which even FaceTime was difficult for her. But, you know, then also telemedicine being, you know, something that people had to adapt to because it was seen as a safer alternative. And combine that with the fact that cannabis was deemed essential, we just, you know, we were really lucky to kind of be in like the intersection of those two.
Yeah. Does it, you know, I guess I asked this question earlier, and I think it applies here as well. Does telemedicine take a hit next year? Is that something that you're a bit, you know, maybe worried about moving into 2021 as COVID is really no longer a mainstream issue?
Yeah, good question.
So I think telemedicine is honestly here to stay. A lot of people that have had the experience and you know, friends of friends that have had the experience, just spreading the word, it's becoming, you know, more convenient, you know, not just from the sense that it saves you time. You know, with us, it also saves you money. And there's different people that, you know, whether you are physically debilitated, you can't do it, can't leave the house. Whether you guys have busy jobs, you know, you don't want to, you know, spend time driving to a clinic, you can do everything from home. I think, you know, like what we hear from patients and feedback wise is once they have that experience, they're in their own space. And so they're able to converse more freely. And some have even said it's the most honest conversation they've had with a doctor because they're at home and they don't feel like they have to, you know, like, you know, put on a performance for anyone, or they could just really be themselves.
Interesting. Yeah.
What are the issues that, I'm sorry, Tony, I keep
asking. No, I was just going to say, like, that was something that I've had to get used to. I actually never did the whole virtual see the doctor thing before COVID. It was always like, you know, it's just, mm-hmm. But I found it interesting, and it was something that you just get accustomed to. And I think I prefer it, you know, going forward.
You know, my doctor actually, also in Manhattan, was, you know, he was moving that way anyway. So, you know, I don't think necessarily telemedicine is going away. I'm just curious if there's something you have to do to combat that post-COVID. So, you know, I guess looking at the medical side of things, what is the most common of the issues that you all see come through there? You know, I'd love to kind of hear what most people are looking or searching for medical cannabis for, at least on Presto Doctor.
Sure. So the most common ailment that we see is honestly dependent on the market, right? So in most states, there's chronic pain. And so because of that, chronic pain is the most common ailment we see. But in a market like California, it's pretty neck and neck with anxiety for the most part historically. But in the last, you know, year with COVID, we've seen, you know, the anxiety numbers spike by about, you know, 40% of patients reporting that as the reason, you know. So I'd imagine, and if that was, you know, a qualifying condition in other markets, we'd probably see something similar.
Yeah.
So you talk about COVID being a challenge. I mean, going forward, what are some of the other challenges that you anticipate? I mean, are you, what keeps you up at night? What do you worry about when in terms of Presto Doctor and your success in the field? There could be something else. I don't want a list of your fears. I think that'd be weird. But, you know, tell me what concerns you going forward into this new year.
Sure. So it's regulation, honestly. It's always been regulation, and it's getting better and better progressively. But I'll give you like one example of when it worked against us. We launched in Pennsylvania. You know, it was our fourth state at the time after New York, and we're pretty excited about business development, just, you know, proximity and just such a great market. But then about three weeks after launch, the state just changed their mind as far as the legislation. The first appointment with the doctor had to be, you know, in person, just all of a sudden. So
yeah,
that was a tough pill to swallow. But with things, you know, kind of progressing and kind of accelerating telemedicine, I don't see that particular issue being a problem, but regulation in general just always kind of keeps me up.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that kind of piggybacks on federal legalization and, you know, what that means overall for your company.
Sure. So legalization is something that we welcome. At the end of the day, people are going to want to talk to a medical professional about something that they're putting in their body, like from a medicinal standpoint. And, you know, whether it be, you know, patients that are currently on pain medication and looking to substitute cannabis and replace it, you know, they'll want to know about drug interactions. They'll want to know about just overall wellness and how cannabis can be used in your wellness routine. And it's not just, you know, a lot of people, we used to asked, you know, do you consume cannabis? And the most common response is, what would you guys guess the most common response is? Just curious.
Not regularly. I don't know.
At midnight.
The most common response is, well, I don't smoke. And, you know, just educating people that there's so many different ways to consume, you know, that, you know, don't actually involve you smoking. You don't even have to get the psychedelic head high that's associated with cannabis. And then also letting people know that the fact that your body already has a system that's designed to consume cannabis. Like, we know about the muscular, skeletal, respiratory systems, but one that was discovered in like the 70s that's not really talked about much,
right,
is the endocannabinoid system. And so the body is, most people's body is deficient of cannabis because, you know, it's not something that we learn in school. And, you know, so.
All that education, I got a lot of long way to go in that regard. So
overpaid. You know,
yeah. So, kind of looking forward and also in the present, how does, and honestly, complete change of topic here. What does social equity look like in this industry to you? And is cannabis, is it improving? You know, it's something that we've talked about several times on this show. So I think getting your opinion here, that would be valuable.
Yeah.
So social equity, what it looks like is people that were affected by the war on drugs, people that, you know, look like me, you know, being able to benefit from all the, you know, wealth that's being generated, whether it be communities of color that were affected, whether it be individuals that were affected and are incarcerated or, you know, have records, you know, getting those cleared up. I think that's very important to moving forward. But also I think representation. I wasn't really a huge proponent of public speaking until maybe about a year ago when I started to do more appearances, and a couple people of color came to me and they told me like they were really happy to see me, you know, leading a company and kind of being present. And so that motivated me because they said seeing someone like look like them motivated them and let them know that they can do it. So I feel like, you know, that's motivating for me. And also I just really like to give back, whether it be our hiring practices at Presto Doctor. We're a very diverse team, both on the administrative team and also physician-wise. It just, you know, offers a more diverse array of, you know, physicians. People sometimes want to talk to a doctor, you know, that looks like them or like the same gender as them or sex, or just, they just like to have those options available to make everyone feel comfortable.
Are you in, you're in California, right? San Francisco? Are you, because I saw Presto's based there.
So we were based in San Francisco initially. We moved HQ to New York, and that's where I am now.
Oh, you're a fellow in New York. Where are you in New York?
I'm in Brooklyn.
Okay. Oh, I thought Elliot said, were you saying that he was in Brooklyn?
No, I was saying you were in Brooklyn.
I'm not in Brooklyn. He's in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, I'm in Brooklyn.
All right. I don't know where I got that. So I was wrong. I apologize to everybody watching. Wrong data, wrong information.
No, well, Rob, I'm curious because if you were in California, familiar with the social equity program there. I mean, I remember covering the Al Harrington interview for Benzinga, and he was not very happy with the social equity program in California. If you can lend some thoughts to that, like, do you think has it improved over the past year, or are there other markets that are better? I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Sure. So the California one, for the most part, it's Oakland has the best program of anywhere in California, and it's obviously still work to be done there. One that I'll comment on that's more recent is there was a lot of people in my community were really upset about the MORE Act, in the sense that there was changes made to the social equity portion of the bill in the 11th hour. And, you know, they had a lot of people championing the bill and they were basically duped, and things were taken out at the end. And so it was something that they were really promoting that was not really in the end really beneficial to the community. And so I think that was pretty disheartening. While we'll still continue to fight, we just would like more transparency when things change, and just like more transparency in general, because that seemed like a, you know, kind of a side door deal to kind of take away equity.
Just an
opportunity.
A quick kind of merging of these conversations here. What, I guess, demographics do you all mostly see on your platform?
Sure. So age-wise, like most of our traffic, about 30% of our traffic comes from, 18 to 25, followed by about 20% in the 45 to 60 age range. And then after that, it's probably even across the field. We do have an age limit of 18 years old, just for liability reasons. And our oldest patient right now is 103 years old. So in that sense, it's such a wide range of patient that we see. It's
really, I want to be that cool at 103.
To cannabis industry.
Yeah, that's awesome. So what about, I guess the underserved communities we were discussing earlier, do you find you have a good footing there? Or is that something that, that education ideally will start to help bridge that gap?
So somewhat of a good footing, but it takes a lot of work, honestly. And what I mean by that is, I'll use my aunt, for example. I've been in the industry for 5 years now, and my aunt knows what I do. And I've been trying to convince her, that she should use cannabis to treat her cancer. She's in stage 4. And, I just want her to have, some kind of compassionate use, and just I think cannabis can really ease her pain. And it took until, recently when I had a pretty large press opportunity that she took it as, oh, you guys have a real company. You guys are really doing something, to the point where she was open to doing it. But that being said, she also experienced my family members, dealing with the war on drugs and dealing with anything that involved cannabis. They were, incarcerated. They were just, opportunities were taken away from them in their lives. And so to her, it represented a lot more than just something that she could use for pain relief. It represented something that she saw just tearing families apart and ruining lives. So I think it's a lot of education from that standpoint of letting people know, hey, this is actually legal now. If you have a medical card, it actually can serve as an insurance policy because, hey, you're protected. Like, hey, now I'm a patient as opposed to, just using.
Interesting.
So really educating people on all those facts is definitely really important. It's more re-education than education, if you will, in certain communities.
Yes, that change of perspective is super important.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do have to wrap up, Rob, but this has been a super insightful discussion. We're going to have you back, my friend.
Yes.
But love what you're doing. Definitely going to follow you guys into next year. And I would love to have you back on, once COVID is kind of coming to a wrap, ideally sooner rather than later. We can see what's going on, Presto Doctor. But Rob, where can people find you?
Sure. So we're on social media at Presto Doctor everywhere, but on Instagram, we are Presto Doctor _official.
There's some guy out there who's the Presto Doctor. He does this.
He's a magician.
Awesome. Rob, thank you so much for being here, sir. We will talk to you again soon. Until then, be healthy and be well.
Yeah, take care, Rob.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Awesome.
All right.
Tony, that was a fun show.
That brings the show to a close. I apologize if you heard a little puppy running around going,
I don't think you should ever have to apologize for a dog.
It was Ernie. He had to insert himself. He thought Ernie. It was playtime, but yeah. It's business time. But business time is over. It's about wrapping up the hour. And Elliot, it was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, my friend. My dog scratched on my door too, if y'all heard that. But it's 2020, y'all. We're coming to an end. But it is always fun. Thank you again to our pre-market prep audience. Thank you to everybody else who showed up as well. We love these conversations. We love learning about who's in this industry, why, what they're doing, what's next. That's what this show is about. Get in touch with us if you have any suggestions, any questions. We're always happy to engage. Until next week, Copper State, Delta 9, Canopy Growth on the show next week.
Looking forward to it. I'm not on it though, but I'm sure you'll have an even better guest than me.
You know all them anyway. You're famous. Awesome. Tony, it's a pleasure. Thanks again, everybody. We'll see you next week at 4 p.m. Eastern Presto. Standard Time.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen, real results, real care, real about recovery.
Progressive Snapshot can save you money based on how you drive and how much you drive. So the safer you drive, the more money you could save. Now, if you didn't hear that because you were looking at your phone while driving, let me say it again. Seriously, put down your phone. That is so unsafe. If you didn't do stuff like use your phone while driving, you could save money with Progressive Snapshot. But saving or not, just put it down. And if you did hear it the first time because you weren't looking at your phone, nice work. You'd love Snapshot from Progressive because it rewards safe drivers. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Snapshot not available in California and North Carolina or from all agents.